Let me first chime in with the other speakers and thank Alessia and Mark for this really great conference and for inviting me to speak here. So you can see this is a very Nordic session, and my task today is, as Luca already said, to introduce the concept of form factors in some more detail. So this will be a slightly more technical talk, even though I try to be as untechnical as possible, but by the nature of the topic, you will have to suffer some formulas here. And what I want to try to convince you of is that this language or framework of form factors is really a very useful one and maybe a unifying language for quantum gravity that we can all use, because as the status of quantum gravity is now, we have all our individual viewpoints and approaches and our own language and tools. And it's really hard to compare apples to apples, right? And I think with this framework, maybe we can make some step forward in really having an apples to apples comparison of some specific predictions. So in this talk, first I will try to motivate where these form factors come from a QFT perspective. So really standard QFT in flat space time, and if you want running couplings or renormalization group. In the second part, I want to point out why this language of form factors is really useful in the quantum gravity setup, and I will discuss gravity-mediated scattering amplitudes. And finally, I will come to this point that form factors may serve as a universal language together with an effective action. So let me start here by discussing a little bit running couplings in the covariant theory. So as you're probably all aware of, it's an established experimental fact that coupling constants, even though we call them constants, they're not really constant, but they run with energy. That means that, for example, in QCD, theory of strong interaction, you have the strong coupling constant alpha s, and if you check what happens at different energy scales of, let's say, a scattering event, you see that if you go to higher energies, the strength of this coupling decreases. And the description of this effect, asymptotic freedom in this case, got these three gentlemen the Nobel Prize in Physics in 2004. So how do we do that? As I said, you sit down in your big experiment, let's say LHC, you measure some scattering cross-sections, and then you compare them to the theoretical predictions from, say, a QFT. And then, as I already said, these coupling constants that you have in your theory, they depend on the energy scale, and this, the dependence is dictated then by what we call the beta function. So for example, for the strong coupling constant, the beta function reads like this. You probably all know this expression. It's negative for a small number of fermions, which indicates asymptotic freedom. Now, if you come from a more fundamental perspective, from a theoretical perspective, maybe you might be a little bit uneasy if, you know, running with energy, especially in gravity, what is energy? So it's maybe a little bit unclear what the fundamental meaning is of such a running coupling constant. And here, by fundamental, I mean really, I want to discuss this in terms of a quantum field theory, of concepts that we use in quantum field theory. And in particular, I will use the language of the effective action, gamma. Just to remind you, the effective action, gamma, works essentially like the classical action, but it includes all quantum effects. So it's a very useful object. The second point that I want to discuss here, that leads up to this idea of form factors, is how do we generalize this notion of running with energy or running with momenta, so to say, to a curved space-time. Because on a generally curved space-time, we don't really have a Fourier transform. So, this is where form factors come in, right? So you've already seen this in the previous talk and also in some other talks this week. And the central point here of form factors is that the renormalization group running, this running with energy, is really the dependence of couplings in the effective action on covariant derivatives or contractions thereof. So for example, in Young-Mills, or let's say QCD, you have your field strength squared term, your coupling constant alpha s, but now the renormalization group running is contained in this box operator. And I should mention that, unfortunately, I have a different convention than Lucas of boxes for me minus d squared. So this is a relatively easy case for Young-Wills, and of course there are higher order terms if you want. You can generalize this notion, and we'll come to that in a minute. In gravity, you've also seen this action. It's also relatively straightforward. Well, you start with the ancient Hilbert part, where it's not really, you can't really introduce these form factors because they're either just acting on something constant, so it's just a constant, or it acts on just the Ricci scalar and then it's total derivatives, and I will not discuss boundary terms today. So the first non-trivial structure really starts at quadratic order and curvature, where you have these two form factors. And you've seen also in Lucas' talk that you can introduce a third form factor, where there's some relations between them that allow you to eliminate one of them by introducing corresponding terms at higher order. Okay, so far so good. So at least at this level, you can make sense of running with a single energy scale of couplings in a covariant framework. And also in particular in the presence of gravity, where these box operators are just really covariant D'Alembertians. Now, once you go to more complicated correlation functions, things are getting a little bit tricky. So let's say we look at now an interaction term of three scalar curvatures, so a three-point function in gravity. And now we have three different box operators. So box one acts on the first Ricci scalar, box two acts on the second, box three acts on the third. So now this idea of a single energy scale that captures the energy dependence of a single coupling kind of breaks down here, right? So, and this is, yeah, you have to take that into account. And then, of course, you can write down more terms like this. This is just one possible combination. And then you can play this game further. You can go to a four-point function, and then it gets even more tricky because now you have six different combinations of covariant derivatives that you can contract into this form factor, and then you need some convention on how to order these because these operators don't commute anymore, in contrast to up here, box one, box two, box three. So this is kind of the general framework, how you can parameterize effective actions with these form factors. And some comments here, so as I said already, if you think of renormalization group running, at least in standard QFT, we always think of a single energy scale and the running in terms of this energy scale. But really, for a general process, which has maybe multiple energy scales that are important, you need to kind of give up this notion, and you have to generalize it to a dependence on multiple energy scales. I want to also point out this really nice paper from very recently, which goes into a similar direction of discussing different runnings and in different definitions of running couplings. The second point that I want to make here is that what I've discussed here is kind of in the spirit of a curvature expansion, which is equivalent to an expansion about a flat metric or a flat field configuration in general, if you think of Yamils. But this is just a technical choice. You can be more ambitious and expand about a curved background or some instanton solution. Form factors get more complicated then, so I just decided to skip the details here. I also want to point out some of my own work on these form factors as part of this collaboration. We developed some technical ideas how to treat these form factors. Also just in practice, so you're invited to have a look at those. So having set the stage, I think I want to now convince you that all what I've told you and shown you is actually useful, a useful tool, and not just, you know, fancy mathematics that you can introduce just for the sake of it. And for that, I want to focus on really the simplest example of quantum field theory. So it's basically the first thing that you work towards in your QFT1 course. It's a two-to-two scattering event. But I want to, of course, focus on gravity-mediated scattering. And then eventually, so I want to compute something like this, and then in the long run, compare this or confront these, the predictions of these with theoretical and experimental constraints. Why is this useful? Well, at least in general, this probes quantum gravity effects, right? There's, let me go back. If I include quantum gravity fluctuations here, gravity propagator, at least in principle, I'm sensitive to quantum gravity effects. There's, of course, a direct link to observables. Once again, at least in principle, might be very hard to measure in practice, but you get a handle on something that people measure. Focusing on scattering amplitudes also has the benefit that it's independent of arbitrary choices like gauge fixing or the way that you regularize your theory, which is a nice feature, especially coming from my background of asymptotic safety, where along the RG flow we have some difficulties with these things. Once again, let me stress that I'm using the effective action here. So tree-level diagrams encode all quantum fluctuations. Good, so what's the strategy if you want to do this analysis of scattering amplitudes? It's really a three-step process. First, you have to understand what terms in your effective action contribute to the scattering amplitude, right? You have to parameterize all the independent form factors that can contribute to the process in question. The second piece is, well, you have to compute these form factors. So you sit down in your favorite quantum gravity theory, you compute those, and you plug them in to the expression that you've computed in step one. The final step is a really exciting part, because now you can confront what you've computed with both experimental constraints and theoretical constraints. And theoretical constraints, I mean something like what Andrew discussed yesterday, positivity bounds and the like related to finiteness, unitarity, causality, you name it. But so in this talk, I just want to focus on this first step. This is where really you see the power of form factors. So the goal is now to parameterize amplitudes of form factors. And for the sake of simplicity, I look at the simplest possible scattering, that's 2-to-2 scalar scattering. So I have a scalar field phi, I have a scalar field chi, and I scatter in this way, so phi phi to chi chi. And I allow for this process to be gravity mediated, indicated by this H. What goes into these two diagrams? Well, certainly for the left diagram, there's a graviton propagator, GHH. And then you need the two scalar one graviton vertices, these black dots. For the contact term, well, this is just a four-point function of two phi fields and two chi fields. Good, so how does the effective action look like that completely specifies the scattering event? Here it is. It's a bit lengthy, but let me guide you through it. The first line we've already seen, that's basically Einstein-Hilbert plus these two form factors, quadratic and curvature. For sake of simplicity, again, I kicked out the cosmological constant because I'm discussing scattering in a flat background. The second line has a generalized kinetic term for the scalar field phi, generalized by an arbitrary momentum dependence, and then some non-minimal interactions between gravity and the scalar phi, parameterized by two form factors. You get a very similar contribution also for the field chi, of course. And then the final term is this contact term between two phi and two chi fields. So once you've computed all these form factors here, you're basically done. And let me stress again that full momentum dependence is key to get towards unitarity bounds and so on. Once again, let me point out, we have a really nice form factor toolbox from some years ago. So if you really want to work with these form factors, have a look at that. So how do these amplitudes look like? Let me first discuss this first diagram, this S-channel diagram. This is the amplitude, pretty compact, but still, well, three lines. So let me once again guide you through this. annotations here. So it's really two contributions that you see here. There's a spin 2 contribution in the first line, and there's a spin 0 contribution in the second line. And these two contributions split into different factors. You have first the vertex factors, which you can see because here you have these form factors that are the non-minimal interaction between gravity and the scalar fields. Then you have the graviton propagator bit, GC and GR, of the spin 2 and the spin 0 mode. And then you have this contraction factor, which in spin 0 case is 1, so I didn't print it here, but in spin 2 case, it just tells you that this contribution is spin 2. And then, of course, I used standard Mandelstam variables, ST and U. Yes, so this is the expression for this diagram. And then, of course, there's the contact term. Well, that's just this form factor evaluated on shell. So this is the answer. So you give me these form factors. I give you the amplitude. Great. Similar computations can be done, of course, for any scattering event. It gets more and more complicated if you look at higher order scattering. What we've done in the past is scalar photon and photon-photon scattering, once again mediated by gravity. What you still have to do is fermions. Let me also stress here maybe that I don't want to go into the details, but of course you can always use field redefinitions in quantum field theory, and in that way you can focus on the essential couplings or those combinations of couplings that appear in the amplitude. And this would be really helpful in computing these form factors. I didn't print it here, but there's a really nice poster by Yannick Kluth outside who discusses some of these aspects, not in relation to form factors, but still really nice computation. Now the final part, last few minutes, I want to go to the final step and convince you that these form factors really serve as a universal language in quantum gravity. So here I collected some approaches where results have been obtained in the past relating to form factors in different approaches. So let me briefly guide you through this. So we have what Luca discussed in his talk just a few minutes ago, like stellar gravity and also actually EFT, where these two curvature form factors just take a general form of a constant plus a logarithmic term. There's also, of course, the non-local gravity bit, where these form factors take some exponential form. And of course, I will not discuss this because Luca did so in his nice talk just a few minutes ago. Then there's also some very recent results in loop quantum gravity that I want to point out here at PI, where this form factor of the y squared term has been computed and looks like this. So it looks a bit like a sum of two propagators. And then there are two approaches that are a bit closer to what I'm working on, basically asymptotic safety, but also CDT, which is very closely related. And here I want to point out two works on the CDT side, my own, and in the asymptotic safety side, a very recent one, which is, I think, really a breakthrough in the field. How much time do I have left?
10 minutes.
Oh, okay. Can be a bit slower then. So form factors in CDT, this is basically building up a little bit on what Renate told us this morning. What in particular we have looked at is a correlation function of fluctuations of the free volume with itself. So you can write down this correlation function, and it has been measured in CDT simulations. Now you can sit down, you can write down an effective action as I've shown you, and compute this correlation functions from a continuum perspective. And we've done so, and so the blue dots here are the numerical data of this correlation function, and the red line is a fit from our continuum perspective. And the fit, it's a really good fit, I think, and what we needed for this fit is this form factor for the R squared term, which goes like 1 over box squared. Now, that looks a little bit non-local, but let me stress here that this has not been obtained in the continuum limit, but it's really one point in theory space where we have still finite lattice spacing. This particular form factor is also interesting from a phenomenological perspective because it has the chance of mimicking dark energy. So there's some line of work by Majore and collaborators who have looked into models with such a form factor. The second thing that I want to really highlight is from the asymptotic safety community, and it's one of the first Lorentzian results that has already been mentioned by Astrid this morning, and that's the graviton spectral function. Let me first stress here that this is based on a Lorentzian computation. So it's not Euclidean, not recrotated. There is a computation like that, and it agrees pretty much with this. But this has been computed in Lorentzian signature. So this is really a great step forward in asymptotic safety, I believe, that now we have actually access to, you know, the right signature. So let me tell you a little bit about this spectral function. The spectral function is, first of all, positive. It has a constant bit in the infrared. It has some bump behavior, like a threshold behavior, and then it has this asymptotically safe tail at large spectral values. What I've not shown is the delta peak, which tells you that you have an actually massless graviton at momentum zero. In this inset, what you can see is the corresponding propagator. There's, of course, a one-to-one relation between the two, and you can see basically the same features. At very large energies, you have a decay, which indicates asymptotic safety. And then at small momenta, you have this 1 over p squared pole. But if you subtract that, you get a logarithmic behavior, and the logarithmic behavior agrees with what you would expect from effective field theory. So overall, I would say this is a really nice result. The spectral function has almost all the features that you would like to have. So it was really a surprise in the end, at least to me, but it's a very positive surprise. So we're really getting there to be able to compute scattering amplitudes in quantum gravity from asymptotic safety. And I hope that we can also do that in other quantum gravity approaches that in the end we can compare. And this is basically the final point that I want to make now. I told you that, well, hopefully we can all use these methods and compare. So in this proceedings, we actually investigated a toy model, a scalar toy model to mimic the basic features that we expect in asymptotic safety and non-local gravity to illustrate what's going on. And here's the results. So we look at a scattering amplitude in the S channel, and for the standard theory without asymptotic safety or some variations like that, you have a rise linearly in energy for the amplitude, which is of course a bit problematic. But then you can see, well, in the asymptotic safety case, well, toy model again, we see that the amplitude goes to a constant, whereas in non-local gravity, we have this exponential suppression for very large energies, which you can see here in this very different behavior. So this is really very concretely, once again, at the level of a toy model, how you can use this language of form factors and effective action and amplitudes to compare very concretely the predictions of different approaches. So let me wrap up. I think in general, it's very important that we get to some notion of falsifiability in quantum gravity. And one useful way to go there maybe is scattering amplitudes, as we've also heard in other talks. The ingredients for these scattering amplitudes can be computed up initio. There's no need to guess, at least in many approaches. And I hope that I was able to convince you that form factors could play a key role here in providing the language, the tools to do all these computations and then compare different quantum gravity predictions. And I'm looking forward to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have some time for questions, Abhay.
Sorry, I just got a little bit confused because you had very nicely explained about how, you know, we don't have momentum space and curved space times, and these form factors are a nice way to do this. But then finally, when you, I mean, Luca's talk, he emphasized that there is a huge choice in which, you know, in the which form factors are. Now, in your case, in the beginning, I thought you also had a huge choice, but then at some stage, you are giving some precise answers. Like that, for example. And so where did those choices come from? I just lost something. Because this is it true, supposed to be true in any curved space-time background? Or what exactly is the...
So there are two things here, I think. So for these approaches, for example, it's kind of built in how these form factors look like. For asymptotic safety, CDT, and loop quantum gravity, these are really computations. Yep. And then these computations give you these answers, right? So I didn't point it out here, but the spectral function can, of course, be directly related to these form factors. The second question is about kind of the viability of this form factor approach, if you want, which I was trying to make here. So as I've presented it, all these, this is kind of an expansion in curvatures. So what is behind here is an expansion about a flat background. But of course, this is just a technical choice. In the end, if we could, we would like to do this to infinite order and then have the full effective action. Of course, in practice, we are limited by our ability to compute things. And maybe for some physical phenomena, this is the right expansion. Maybe for others, we have to expand about the sitter space and then get the right physics. But then we have to slightly adapt this framework.
So in asymptotic safety and in Stelle's theory, the expansions are about Minkowski space or what? I mean, that's my confusion. Loop quantum gravity, I understand what was done. But in the other cases, I'm not sure exactly what the effective action was expanded around Minkowski space perturbation theory or...
It doesn't really matter. So as long as you have a one-to-one mapping between, let's say, the beta functions of these and... Well, if you can map beta functions, you're fine. So you just need a basis which uniquely specifies the form factors, and then you can compute beta functions for them.
We'll talk later. I'm still confused.
So, Knez, with the graviton spectral density, how did you compute that? You're actually doing?
That one?
Yeah.
Sorry, what's the question?
How did you compute that?
I didn't compute it. It's in this really nice paper. The basic idea is that you actually write down the flow equation for the spectral function itself. That was kind of the deciding trick. So you have the standard Wetterich flow equation, which is formulated in terms of correlation functions. But then basically you write the propagator as the integral over the spectral function, and then you can derive the flow equation for the spectral function.
So that's in an exact renormalization group?
Yes, exactly.
So I don't see other urgent questions, so I would suggest to close the session and thank Benjamin and all the speakers of the morning.